I've always said you win the hearts, then the minds, and the hands will do anything after that.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. Today, we have Mike Trimble, Executive Vice President, Philanthropist, and President of Hope Factory, a 501c3 nonprofit. Mike, welcome to episode 83 of the American Grown Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's an honor.
I'm glad you could be here. Seriously,
Trimble. Glad I could.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Look forward to it.
Yeah, now we've known each other
long time.
You know, through photography, Blue Cardinal Photography, taking pictures, and you know, even before that, just like with Jazz and Isaiah.
You're like family, man.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. I think definitely we're on that level, you know. Yeah. And with Gary, there's so much like rich history, and just the people that we know that are out in this community, you know, this community here in Lebanon County.
Yeah, it connects us.
Definitely. So like, I want to get your background from, you know, early childhood on up.
Sure.
And definitely talk about Hope Factory. Kind of the reason then that, that we're having this conversation today is because of John Guth.
Yeah.
Guthy, you know, he texted a little while back now and said, hey, you should have Trimble on to talk about this nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh yeah, it's a no brainer.
Yeah.
You know? So definitely. All right. And we'll get into all that. So shout out to Guthy if you're listening. Mm-hmm. He's an awesome guy. He's one of our clients here at ColorTech. So we greatly appreciate that.
Yeah. He's one of my board members on the Hope Factory.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. All right. Sweet. So we're going to learn all about that. Let's start off though with your, you know, your early childhood. What was it like? Where'd you grow up?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Sully, right here in Lebanon County. And I've been blessed not to have to move away. And I think that's what draws me closer to wanting to help out the community. And we'll talk about that later. But, you know, I grew up in probably, I guess we'll say, the east end of Lebanon, down near Lebanon Village area. And went to Henry Howe as a young kid. And then my mom had some troubles, and we went, moved a couple times. So I went to, ended up going to three elementary schools. I know that's kind of unheard of, but I was able to go to Henry Howe and went over to Harding for a little bit, ended up at Northwest. And then I kind of went through the normal junior high days and Lebanon High School. And, you know, I was an athlete, so I was able to kind of interact with a lot of great coaches, a lot of great people, a lot of great parents. So again, I know everybody has, you know, some challenging youth stories and stuff, especially coming up here in Lebanon. But, you know, I got to say, I really enjoyed, you know, my my youth here. I was exposed to some things I'd rather, you know, I wish I wasn't. I've seen my mom go through some tough relationships after, you know, my father left. He went to chase, you know, a Major League Baseball career and kind of left us. And that hurt. That one still stings today, Sully. You know, I'm a baseball player. Yeah. He had opportunities with Cincinnati Reds, the Orioles, the Pirates.
Oh, wow.
Stuff like that. And I chased my baseball dream as well. Probably got some of my skill from him. But, you know, as my mom tried to find a father figure for me, I watched her pick maybe a couple of the wrong people. I watched a lot of domestic violence in the home. It scared me as a young kid. And then it led to some sexual assault. And that stuck with me as well. And I think that, again, also leads me to why I want to continue to help this community, because I felt I grew it. I grew up in it, and I'll do anything in my power to have somebody have a chance to get away from it. But I've enjoyed Lebanon County. I really have. I've had a lot of wins here. I've been able to start a great career here in the wireless industry, which I continue to stay in, out at the Lebanon Plaza, if you remember that.
Oh my gosh,
Cellular One and bag phones
back
in the day. But all that stuff started here in Lebanon, PA. And now, you know, I sit as an executive vice president in a company based out of Indianapolis. But it all happened here in Lebanon County, man.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's wild. And, you know, to take it back a little bit, you know, you mentioned you went to three elementary schools.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, but I also did.
Did you?
Yes. Yeah,
there's not many of us.
Yeah, there's not many of us. Right, right. Started out at Lebanon Catholic and then went to Southeast, which is part of Lebanon School District, and then ended up at South Lebanon.
That's when
I got to Cedar Crest.
Yep.
Because when I was young, mom and dad divorced, and I think something like 50%, I think it is roughly of the country or maybe even the world, you know, the parents are split.
That is correct.
And it's, I think that it has a great impact, you know, on how
really
people
does.
Grow up, whether it's a young man missing the father or the daughter missing the mother, you know, luckily my parents got along, so, and they're both in my life.
That's wonderful.
But, you know, yeah, it's crazy. You went to three elementary schools and so did I. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And thing is, you know, if you think about it, Sully, I keep talking about learning from things that I've kind of had to overcome, and we all have, which is wonderful. I love hearing other stories. But I think it built us into better individuals. That's why I say, you know, I really enjoy being around you, Sully, because, again, your energy, your attitude, your positivity. I strive to be around people like that. And, you know, when you look at, you know, what my mother dealt with after losing, you know, her husband, you know, my wife Robin and I have been together. We're celebrating our 25th year anniversary. So Jasmine and Isaiah, our children, have never seen a broken family.
Yeah.
And I was committed to doing that, not just because of my mom, but for the love of my wife. But it's one of those things we never want our children. I know you have two little ones to ever go through what we went through. But again, you have two beautiful parents. Thank God that they're still around and doing grandparents things for you now. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, man. I think I've taken my battle scars and tried to make them trophies.
Yeah. And see, you know, growing up around that and seeing, you know, these hardships that your mom went through, what was like a takeaway or what's something that was instilled in you, whether by your mother or just by being around it, that you've learned and you carry with you to this day?
You know, I speak a lot about this, you know, at summits that we do for work or sales rallies. And a big one for me, Sully, was just the ability to overcome hardship, you know, and keep a positive attitude, do it for a bigger purpose. You know, a lot of times I'm either working for, you know, my employee, my downline out into the field. We have, you know, 200-400 stores at times, and we got to overcome things. And I want to be a better role model for people through adverse times. And I've watched my mother overcome so much cancer down the stretch. And I have a great story. We can touch on that if you want in a little bit, but, just our tenacity that she's taught me to overcome with a positive attitude and make, you know, the best of everything, look at the glass half full. And even in the face of cancer, she continued to do that as a nurse for 30 years at the VA.
Oh, wow.
She was helping others as she was dying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just who she was, and that's what she wanted to be.
Strong woman, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, loved it.
Yeah.
Learned a lot from her.
Yeah, yeah, and you carry that strength with you. I mean, you know, and you're instilling that not only in your family, but in the people that you're working with.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? The impact that you're having.
Thank you. I appreciate
that.
I hear that a lot. A lot of times I don't, you know, we do extremely well with metrics and you know, the business as a whole financially. But, you know, I always talk about let's help better people, not results. You know, and
ooh,
then all of a
like
sudden
that.
When I better people and then any widget that we, you know, we're interacting with, we do much, much better. And,
yeah.
And I told people at my funeral, I think I would love for people to say that. And like, Trim, that'll be the first thing we ever say, is that it was always about the people and never the results.
Yeah.
And we ended up being the best in results. But I think it's because of that commitment to people, because people raise results, you know, words do not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
Oh, exactly. You invest in the people that are around you.
Exactly.
That's like I say here at the shop, and I'm taking it from Adam Kuhn, shout out. He was in an earlier episode.
Yeah.
And he said that the name on the door, you know, Color Tech, Blue Carbon Photography, whatever it is because of the people in the back, the people working, you know, they're the ones that make or break you. You know, they are Color Tech, you know, they are the business, whatever it may be. And, that's 100%. You want to invest in the people, because if you invest in, if you care about them,
then
it shows in the results. And right.
Yeah. They invest. And you talk about getting through adverse times. You know, a lot of people are quick to run away when things get tough. And you can see it in the job force today. You know, they're just running from one job to the next, or somebody's tough on them. We see it in sports and these, you know, transfer portals.
Right.
And people.
Oh, yeah.
Anytime times adversity hits, people are running.
They're jumping. Yeah,
I think
jumping
in our company, I'm extremely proud. It's number one in the nation. And, of course, we're a wireless retailer. But we're number one in retention, and that's over T-Mobile corporate. That's over AT&T corporate. So very, very proud of that. And people ask me all the time, like, why is that? And I said, three major, you know, roles that I've always kind of came to the business with is I'm going to first and foremost win the person's heart. I really want to know about them. What makes them tick? Why are you here today? It's probably not to make money. It's because you need to support something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I want to know what that is, and I want to show a genuine care for that. And then I want to win their mind by showing them that I'm investing in you. I'm going to train, develop, you know, for the future, and we can do this together. And when I do that, I've always said you win the hearts, then the minds, and the hands will do anything after that. But how many times do you walk into something where they immediately attack the hands? Do this, work harder, work longer, do that.
Right.
You don't even know me. And you're continuing, you go right to my hands. Like I have to serve and serve and serve.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to flip that. Hands will be last. You know what I mean?
Love
you're going to move your hands because you want to. And, you know, like I said, that's worked well for me. And I think that's the same thing with my 501c. It's more of giving of action time and before even just treasure. I can just give money out, but I'd like to show them that we genuinely care, but I want to win the hearts and the minds of the people that we're serving. And then everybody on my board is willing to do everything for the people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's huge. It's just like, I love that because if you can see the results that you're generating, right?
Yeah.
Like, especially with nonprofits, like for instance, I had Cornell on again make earlier.
Yeah.
He said, you know, going out around Thanksgiving or Christmas and delivering gifts to the kids that don't get any or the single parents, you know, with three or four kids and to see their face, you know what I mean? That really pulls on your heartstrings and
it'll make you do it more.
It makes you invest more exactly because you care more. I like that. So instead of cutting people down, hey, you got to work faster, work harder. Mm-hmm. You learn about them. You find out what they're passionate about, why they're there, because there's a purpose why they're not just money.
Yeah.
You know, but it's somebody that they care for. They're probably helping out. I really like that. Yeah. And Trim, since I met you, you have a great energy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I appreciate
that. You know, you and like I said, just the whole crew there with John Guth. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to learn more about the board and we'll get all into that. But like, you know, whether you were at Nick Services or, you know, we can talk a little bit then about Play It Forward, how you kind of had that going. Now that, I don't know if it was a 501c3, but like everything you've done seems to always have some success and been positive for the community. So, you know, to kind of fast forward a little bit, you're into sports, you know, high school. Yeah. What was your plan after like graduation or segue into like, you know, elementary, then you get into high school?
Yeah,
and so
no problem. Yeah. Like I said, you know, moved around a little bit in elementary school, landed on my feet, you know, and then once we landed into the junior high system and then high school, three sport athlete, you know, loved baseball, basketball, football. That opened a lot of doors for me to get around, you know, good quality people, good coaches that can kind of instill those kind of characteristics that I pride myself on today. I got them just nuggets along the way, as we all have. But, you know, I grew up, baseball was, you know, my passion. Again, you know, we talked a little bit about my dad, and I think I was kind of given some of those skill sets. So played at a high level in high school, was a shortstop, and had the ability to go on to college. I went down to Penn State, Berks. And the reason, you know, I had a chance to go what they call like Division One. I had a couple Big Ten offers. So you got Penn State, Illinois, Iowa. And I think at the time, a little bit further out for me, but was Indiana. I didn't really want to kind of travel that far, Illinois, that side of the country, Midwest, I guess, and was ready to go. And I found out that my wife of 25 years, Robin, was pregnant. And I just finished high school. So did she. And to this day, Sully, you know my life at home, but I've committed my life to my wife because I feel like I might have cheated her out of some of her adolescence, you know, at a young age, at 20 years old, having a daughter. So I've committed so much to making her happy. And at that point, I sat there with the letters to kind of leave to go chase my dream of baseball again. And that dad story came back. And it's like, I'm about to do the exact same thing. And a lot of times we hear, oh, you're just like your dad, or, you know, I couldn't handle hearing that. And even growing up, oh, you play a lot like your dad, you remind me of your dad. And I'm like, and that stung because I didn't have a big, good feeling about my dad. I respected him as a father to some point. I respected his talent level, but I wanted to grow to be better. And I learned, you ever heard probably of learning a lot from somebody who did it wrong?
Yes.
And learning what not to do. And I don't mean to throw any stones right now. You know, I wish him the best, but that chance to move out of my family, move away from my wife and go chase a college baseball dream, I turned it down. And I ended up working in a factory for a year. I was just lost mentally, emotionally, like giving up my dream for the right reason. But, you know, looking at that beautiful little girl, Jasmine, and thinking I'm going to make this work. But here I'm working at like Murray Steaks. Here I was a college, recruit, and I kind of gave up. Took about a year. My grandparents have been incredibly influential in my life. And they talked to me and said, hey, and a lot of my friends said, why don't you go play where you can commute? You got to, you know, keep playing. Maybe that can provide for your daughter. Maybe you can get some education and help get out of these factories. This isn't what.
Yeah, because you're not a factory guy.
No.
No, no.
And I didn't like it when I was there either, by the way.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I didn't, you know, I said, okay, fine. So Penn State reached out to me and said, hey, why don't you trial some of our branch campuses? Reading was close enough, 45 minutes away. Went down there, a little bit less competition, but I was able to get all state both years as a shortstop there. And then I got the offers coming back in again, you know, and the chance to go Notre Dame started to pop on the list. Florida Atlantic was a big one. Appalachian State was one that I went and visited, thinking maybe I could bring my family with. This could have had been an opportunity. As the time came closer to make that ride, I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. Just because of what I felt that I had to overcome, and I just won't let my daughter deal with that. So I locked down and at an early age got out of school, turned down the offers, and got into Foot Locker. I think you might remember me back then, but then I got recruited out there at the Lebanon Plaza. Cellular One and cell phones came into the game. They're like, Trim, your energy, your charisma, like, you got to be part. I know it's different, it's new, but it's fun. And I'm like, let's give it a shot. And man, that was probably about a 26-year career and never looked back. I've been in wireless my entire life. One of the fastest growing industries in the world. So a lot of people are like, hey, you've done well. I probably wouldn't have done as well if I would have picked real estate or car sales. And not throwing any stones, but you know, there's so many ebbs and flows.
Right.
Cell phones aren't going anywhere.
No, they're only going up. Yeah. They're getting more popular. But who doesn't have a cell phone?
Yeah. So that's been the run, man. So I got close to probably doing what my dad did twice, but my heart, again, I felt I did it for the right reasons. Later on, it's the greatest decision I made. We went on to have a son, love of my life as well. And man, I have a beautiful family, 25 years strong, really 32. That's tomorrow awesome. Is Jasmine's 32nd birthday. So me and Robin have been together 33 years. We've only been together 1 year before we said, hey, let's have a family.
Yeah.
But two beautiful children, you know, one's 25, the other one's about to turn 32. So I look up a lot at my mom, you know, in heaven and say, thanks, you know, for what you taught me, make wise decisions in adverse times. And those are two of the greatest ones I've ever made. So,
yeah. Shout out to Robin, Isaiah, and Jazz out there. Yeah. All you guys.
Thank
you're
you.
You're an awesome family. So, yeah, I mean, really, like you said, it was your heart, you know, and that was turned out to be the right decision for you. Cause imagine had you gone to maybe at that time, you know, chase your dream, right?
What if it don't work?
Cause what, you know, and what high school kid doesn't want to, or college kid doesn't want to chase their dream, be a baseball player, you know, especially at some of the colleges you mentioned, but yet your heart was like, no, this is the right thing to do. This is my family. This is what I'm going to do. And now, look where you're at, you know, look what you're doing, and you're keeping it right here.
Absolutely. Local
in Lebanon County, right in the community.
Absolutely.
So, so after high school, you know, working the factory job. Oh my gosh. Yeah, definitely. I'm glad you got out of that.
Scared me.
So
I came home crying one night. So like to my mom, I'm like, you know, I'm here, I'm an athlete, you know, and I'm like, mom, this can't be everything life is, you know, this factory. And she's like, well, you know, you chose, you know, this lifestyle, you're going to have to create an earnings for your family. You know, you can work harder to find another way to do it. But, you know, for right now, this is what you're going to do. And I just kept day after day, I'd show up, I'd be on time. I'd stay there till close. I worked the hours, but I was like, I'm going to bust my butt to kind of find a better way for my family. Cause again, I'm not throwing any shade on Murray Steaks or the families that work are provided for there, but I just felt there's a better way. If I could add a little bit more energy in the right areas of my life, I think I could make a difference.
Yeah.
So,
well, let's speak on that too, a little bit. Cause I feel like a lot of, you know, younger people or just in general, maybe in their 30s and 40s or maybe feel stuck at their job or they're doing something they don't really like to do, but they're like, well, it's a paycheck, you know, how can they, or what are your thoughts to get out of that cycle? You know what I mean? Like, okay, you got your 9 to 5, you keep showing up, but you don't really love it. Life's short. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, Sully, great question. Luckily, you know, we have very good retention at the company that I run as we speak. However, when I talked to a lot of youth, you know, even my children and so forth, we'll give it to country music. You know, when they say, find something you love and call it work. I preach that a lot because, you know, I just recently have given up drinking. I've turned myself over to our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And what I'm learning real quick, Sully, by studying is our time here is so short.
Yeah.
You know, and he has a plan for us all. But when we have an opportunity to really identify where our current space is at in life, and what you need to do sometimes, I talked to a lot of youngsters, is I want you to detach. Doesn't mean don't go to work. I want you to detach for a little bit. Go find some time. Go on a drive. Go on a walk. A couple times a week, and really ask yourself, where do you want to get to? And I want you to think about a GPS plan. Is this? Are you still on the right path? And if it's not, I don't want you to quit what you're doing. I want you to be loyal to any employer that you're doing it. But I want you to find another way to land something else. And I want you to continue taking steps towards what you want to do, because our time, you know, he didn't put us on earth here to go and do things we do not like. Yeah. Now, if you think about that, nobody would probably want to be a janitor. I understand that, but there's finding ways of something you feel that you can give back to, that you have the skill set and the will to want to do it.
That's it.
And not everybody's blessed to do different things. We understand that, but I truly want people every day to strive, Sully, to find something that you truly love and call it work. And I don't care if you call that parenting. I don't care if you call that, you know, coaching for free, midget baseball, but go find that outlet. Because if you can't get it where you're making an earning sometimes early on, go find something else that you're going to work hard at. Even if it's your personal body and you're working out and doing something, but find that and work really hard at it. Because I think what that does, it spills back over into that job that you have that maybe you don't like.
Yeah.
And you start to get those characteristics that will probably get you out of there. But you needed that self-discipline, that drive, that will, that skill. But you knew how hard it took to work to do something that you're loving to do, even if it's working with young kids in a sport or working part-time. Or a lot of times I try to push my guys into nonprofits and go give time and see how that makes you feel. Because honestly, you can work at a lot of places. You may not make as much money, and most times where you're working at doesn't make a lot of money. But what if you love doing this one more? And that has been probably some of the best advice I've ever given somebody, and I've taken it myself. I chase down love. And then when I found something like wireless that I really loved interacting with people and then helping motivate youngsters in this industry, I don't know if I'll ever retire. I just, they're going to have to kick me out. So.
Yeah, yeah. Do it till the wheels fall off, right?
Exactly.
That's what they say.
Yeah, but that's me.
I think that's huge for anybody out there listening, you know, that's going through a tough time. You know,
sure.
Find a way, like you said, each day to kind of better yourself. And then find something that you're passionate about, whether it's nonprofits, whether it's something creative like drawing, listening to music, podcast. You know what I mean? Something that's going to better yourself and work at it. Exactly.
Because
you never know what's going to click and take you from that 9 to 5 to, you know, to open up your own bakery or starting a podcast.
Beautiful.
You know what I mean? You never
know. American dream.
Exactly.
It's an American dream. But they don't just hand those out.
No.
You got to find something you love. But I said, I think you got to find that characteristic of how hard you work at being a good mom, a good father, a good uncle, a good coach, a good nonprofit worker, whatever you do, you work that hard to do that. Take that into work with you. Either I think you accelerate inside the job force you're at there today, or you realize you're probably going to outgrow that place and other people will be recruiting you to leave. And that's the ones that make it to the top.
Yeah, that makes a difference. I couldn't agree more. Kind of fast forward a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, we mentioned like play it forward and all that.
Yeah.
Let's speak a little bit on that because you are or were on a bunch of different boards and you give a lot of your time, you know. And of course, like I mentioned when you came in, you look great.
You
losing weight and, you know, like you said.
I'm working out. I fell in love with trying to kind of better myself. Lost about 25 pounds. I just feel better. You know, and I start to love myself more and you don't want to give that back up.
You got your
love
swagger.
That feeling.
You got
Thank
your swagger.
You.
Exactly, that's what it is, you know. Yeah. And it shows, you know what I mean? And let's take a quick sip break.
Yeah, no problem. Let's do that. Water's good for you. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, Sully, that kind of led me to, you know, you ask about play it forward, you ask about all the board seats and stuff like that. It was, again, finding something you love and calling it work. And I was doing that, and I'll give you kind of where it led into play it forward, you know, for me and one of my best friends, Mike Kapp, assisted with that. Then a bunch of cast members, including yourself, that have kind of made some of those events historical. Some great, some not so great, but they were historical, but they did generate money. And I'll talk about that in a second, but let me give you why we got there. And I haven't told the story a lot and ended up going through some therapy over it in the last couple years. 22 years ago, April 11th, I was playing some softball up in the Palmyra area. I had a ball game that night, Sully. Life's good. You know, I have Jazz at the time. In the wireless industry, working with T-Mobile, a great company. Love what I was doing. Worked my way up right into management and felt I was on top of the world. Like I was doing the right thing for my wife and my daughter and my soon-to-be son at the time. And actually, I did have Isaiah at the time. I lie. He was just a baby. But driving home, buddy said, hey, let's stop somewhere for a beer quick. And I'm like, all right, I'll stop. It's Thursday night. And we stopped, I think it was Corvette Bar. And one of those nights where you're kind of bored. So I ended up having a salad and maybe two beers. And that was it. Then I get the phone calls for Thursday Night Football. It was in the fall. And they're like, Trim, you got to come to the Evergreen if you remember that place.
I do remember the Evergreen. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So I was like, man, guys, I'm tired. I said, I just got done playing. They're like, come on, we got to talk about our flag football and everything else we're throwing. And my brother-in-law was going. And my other brother-in-law was going. And I was like, all right, I'll stop in. So still in my uniform, still wearing a softball uniform. I get there, 8, 9 o'clock. And the guys are there having some wings. And I had some wings with them, had some beers. And it's the end of the night. We're still talking about the teams and what we have to raise money for the team and stuff. And it's about 11:30, 12 o'clock. Sully and I is like, guys, I'm out. Like, I'm exhausted. I had my feet up. I'm watching just the games that they had on.
Trying not to fall asleep, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, watching the highlights of the game we just watched.
Yeah.
And, but it was just one of those nights. So it wasn't one of those crazy get out, go crazy on a Saturday night kind of night. So I said, guys, I'm going to head out. I go out. If you know that area, I kind of go over to the parking lot that was out in front. I pull out of the parking lot. I turn left and take another left to head up to Lehman Street there past the, I think that's Gertie's or yeah. And as I'm pulling up through cell phones, I'm looking for my phone and I'm kind of looking around and all of a sudden I hear like a thump on my car and I look up for a second and my brother-in-law is still in front of me. So I thought, oh damn, I just ran in the back of his car.
Yeah.
He kind of pulls out. I try to pull out to kind of, you know, I'm calling him. He's not answering once I finally got my phone and he doesn't answer. And I'm like calling him and calling him. And he's about a half a block away. So I'm driving. He gets up to about, I can't believe the Italian village, turns left to go towards his house.
Yep.
And I'm like, all right, well, I'll get a hold of him. He apparently wasn't that bad. So I keep driving Lehman all the way back over to Chestnut Hills. When I get home, he calls me then. He must have found his phone. He said, hey, what's up? And I said, hey, I am so sorry, you know, that I ran in the back of you guys. And he's like, no. And I'm like, hold on, what?
Yeah.
And what we find out later was a gentleman was up in Lehman Street coming down that little road. It's like 50 miles an hour, 20 miles an hour. But must have been, you know, having some fun. God love him. And what we found out later, maybe pulled a wheelie and was going to cut through a little alleyway in between Gertie's and the Evergreen and tried to cut maybe between the 4Runner and my vehicle and maybe not even saw me. Apparently lost control of his motorcycle, never hit my vehicle, but he slid in the corner of his helmet, just caught. That's what that thump was on my car. Wasn't, again, I had my music up, wasn't crazy loud, to be honest with you, but till I kind of like shook it off, I'm like, what the hell was that? But anyway, I immediately called the police. I said, hey, something hit my vehicle. I didn't know what it was at the time. I said, I assumed I ran into the back of my brother-in-law's vehicle. He said I did not. They came out. A friend of mine was one of the deputies at the time and said, hey, Mike, why don't you come with us? And I found out later, Stephen Lear, God rest his soul, I pray for him and his family every night, lost his life that day. And during that time, Sully, like I said, that was tough. And it still is every day. I pray that that's what the Lord wanted. That was his plan for both of us, that, you know, maybe he had to call him home. Doing something he loves. I try to make myself believe that. And maybe he had to wake me up, you know, and say, hey, you need to do something different in your life. Not necessarily my job, but, you know, better the world. And it took me a while to understand that. So what I did then was took responsibility. I wasn't charged with the accident at all. But I was 0.09 when back then it was 0.08. I was just over, you know, some people, yeah. God forbid, I'd never want to do this, but some people have 2.3 or 2.5. Dude, I was 0.09 of a 0.08. Yeah. But I was very quick. I told my family, whatever charge that I have to get, if that's a DUI or whatever you want to charge me with, I went in front of the judge. I accepted. However, I did not do anything to hurt anybody. And, I know the damage it caused to another family. And, so with that, you know, I had, again, here you go, local athlete, you know, I had a big name in this community, my name and my family's name ripped into the papers. You know, back then we didn't have social media. I can't imagine what that trauma would have been like to everybody involved, but it was all over the newspapers, all over the news, and it hurt, and it still does, but I committed myself that we're going to make a difference. So even though this community at times, you know, media decided to run me down, and I said, that's not me. I want the world to know that's not me. I would what never
were
do
they,
something.
Yeah, what were they saying?
It
what
was were, a, then, a yeah. drunken, deadly hit and run.
Oh, Jesus.
An obnoxious athlete, thinks he can get away with everything. I'm trying to think. There were some more malicious. Then, of course, it ripped into another one having kids at a young age. Everything about
going
me.
After that. Yeah, going after
and
everything.
And I'm like, man, you don't even know me. Yeah. But I never got interviewed for it.
No way.
Never
they never
once.
Came to
no
talk to
No one's
you.
Ever interviewed me. They That's just put ridiculous. Whatever storylines they could put in.
Right. And, whatever's going to sell. Ain't that awful.
Yeah. And I knew some of the people that were very close to Steve. They were friends of mine. And that's how I had to get my thoughts and my prayers back to the family. To this day, you know, I pray every day. I wish that night would have never happened. But if I stand here and have the honor to be on your podcast, it's probably because of that event. And my mother saying, oh, that's some adverse time.
Yeah.
How are you going to turn that one around into a positive? So I went to one of my best friends, Mike Cap. I said, we got to find a way to help this community.
Shout out to Cappy, by the way.
By the way, shout out, Cap. Thank you for all your support through this. And we ended up building a program called Play It Forward. We generated money by having big dances. Like, you know, you had Stan's Disco. And then we had the Play It Forward dances. And then we had golf tournaments and things of that nature. And then we were able to sponsor young kids, you know, coming through the system. I wanted to get back to the sports. And we try to find some underprivileged teams that don't have gym time, but they're practicing outside in the hot sun at South Hills.
Right.
I found that team. I said, we're going to get you uniforms. We're going to get you gym time. We're going to do that. Shawnee Shellhammer and his family helped do that a lot. And we got Play It Forward. And I just want to get the name out there. I wanted to stand for something. I didn't want to stand behind it as my face, but I wanted it to know. And if somebody asked how did it start, I want them to know that that community at times that ripped me down, I'm still here giving back. Yeah. And I think that's what we should all do. Not everybody knows your story and they might tell it wrong, but if you know your real story, then you go tell the rest of it. And that's what I'm trying to do. So Play It Forward, over a 10-year span, we've raised over $250,000 for Lebanon County.
Wow.
We've helped programs like Volunteers in Medicine, those that can't have, didn't have the means, children that don't have dentists and so forth. We helped SARC, Sexually Abused Resource Center, which is a big thing for me. We've helped NIC kids. We've helped Autism Speaks was a big one for me. I was able to speak at their school up in Hershey. I was incredibly moved by that as well. We've helped NIC kids, as we just said. We helped breast cancer awareness. We did a lot of Secret Santa, as we talked about, where, you know, they wake up and there's just a ton of love on the front porch and they don't know where it came from. That's the way I wanted it to be. And there was constant chances for us to find ways to help this community. And Mike and I never once wanted to be interviewed for it. I was adamant about that. I wanted to tell the story without them saying, you know, he's doing it for the wrong reasons.
Okay.
So today's one of the first times I've ever told the accident story of what led me to philanthropy. But then I, you know, you've asked about board members. I've sat with a SARC against dealing with that myself at a young age. Hearing some of the battles and traumas of even younger children or even elderly being abused in Lebanon County is just heartbreaking. And they need a lot of help. So we were able to raise thousands and thousands of dollars for SARC. And then I sat on the board at NIC Kids as a vice president there.
Yes.
Really enjoyed that afternoon programs for children that may not have the needs, but have a desire. You talked earlier, Sully, about, hey, you look at them, maybe they're not paying attention in class, they're struggling, but they're drawing and they look amazing drawing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or you see even anger and they just need an outlet for that.
Music, karate,
you know, sports, anything that we could offer. And I'm so proud of Rich Stutzman and Gordon Price and all of those guys, your family as well with the Garloffs and everybody who's helped with that has made a huge difference in this community. But going and working with those programs have really opened me up, given me almost the foundation to start my own 501c3, understanding, you know, how you go about getting it off the ground.
Yeah.
Because Play It Forward was just us. It was just me and Cap and family members like yours going out to the community, asking for donations, asking for help, asking for assistance in certain things. And they were willing to do it without even a 501c, so they can't even tax write off that.
Right, yeah.
And I thought, man, we raised $250,000 in 10 years. What can I do if it was a 501c3? And they really want to hear the rest of our story and what a small town like Lebanon can do for its own. And that's kind of what got me here, man. But like I said, it was a adversity, you know, what I was up against. And, you know, I thought about my mom and here, how do I make that turn? And crazy story, Sully, and I'll keep it short. So I'll try not to get the emotions too flowing here. A lot of people ask me, you know, you can always talk about your mom overcoming adversity. What's the biggest thing she's overcame? And, you know, a lot of people, she worked at the VA at times, you know, it's been struggling for all the people working there with resources and dollars and so forth. But right. 30 years of being a caregiver. And wow. She was committed. And she a lot of times that's a thankless job. It really is. And she was committed. And I love that. So I thought maybe that was it. And I was like, no. Then I watched her, you know, get physically abused to hospitalization where she's been hospitalized. And I'm a young kid looking through the grates from upstairs watching this yeah. and just crying and trying to find a way. At 11 years old, I thought maybe this was my first fight, and I come down to fight a guy, and I'm 11 years old, so I'm getting beaten up, but I'm not giving up anymore. And then that ended that and kind of got me into, you know, weightlifting and thinking, I got to protect my mom, you know. And luckily, that was, you know, about the end of the road of her meeting, you know, physically abusive people, a lot of mental things like that. But I thought maybe that was it. So I've always believed that was my mom's, you know, coming out party as far against adversity and keeping the right frame of mind, always very Christian-like. And then I watched the show of a lifetime, Sully. My mom came down with cancer, lung cancer, really had really only one functioning lung, you know, for a long time. And one winter, you know, or I guess early fall, she had some friends over doing something, and then somehow she was incredibly winded, and they had to rush her to the hospital. They found out that she had pneumonia, and that was the problem, and that scares you, you know, at her yeah. age. You know, she was only probably, I think, 63, 64, but, you know, dealing with one lung and pneumonia, and she was a frail girl, you know, lady. I went in, and I thought I was just picking her up, and we went and talked, and the doctor said we'd like to keep her here. And I'm like, oh, okay. Is it worse than we think it is? He's like, right, yeah. Well, and he pulled me aside. He goes, this is going to be tough. And I didn't expect that. Like, my mom was just a day prior watching Zaya quarterback Cedar Crest. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just up and down the field and having fun with us. You know what I mean? I was like, okay. I said, Mom, you good? She goes, we're good. And I'm like, all right. So they kept her there. This is maybe September. She's in and out for about a month. She's out for a couple of days. She loses her air. They rush her right back. They give her oxygen. They rush her right back. They rush her right back. And now she's in from about mid-October, Sully, to, and I'm there every night, till the day before Thanksgiving. And that's a long time, you know, to be struggling with pneumonia. And about November 2nd, I believe it was, I got a phone call about 3 a.m. I finally went home. I'd be there until 1-2 o'clock to, like, might go home, get a shower, do whatever, come back.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd be back there visiting now as I kind of sneak in. They let me stay with her. But I came back. I was home there for just an hour. I get this call and they're like, you may want to come in and say your final goodbye. She's not going to make it. Okay. That was the longest ride to the hospital I've ever had. And I tried to be strong. I try to believe that I have the right things to say, and I just kept being optimistic. You're going to be all right, Mom. You're going to be all right.
Right. Yeah.
So I get there and I have that talk with her, and at that point she was kind of sedated, and Robin was, you know, there with me, but I couldn't keep it together. I said, I got to go. I spoke. I said, you know, what I had to say, Sully, and I left.
Mm-hmm.
And,
when you left,
that was a long. I just went for a drive.
What'd you do? Yeah,
yeah. That's why I said, Robin, just take me for a drive. And I tried to figure it out, and I couldn't figure it out. And as we're driving, she said, "Let's go home." She took me home. I was exhausted. I fell asleep, and I get up. As soon as I got up, I said, "Can we go back in now?" I got it together. Let's go figure out what we do now. And I get there, and she's awake.
Oh,
and okay. The doctors are like, wow, Mike, I'm so sorry. And I was like,
yeah, what?
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 And like, she, through the evening, she really found some strength and came through. And I thought of course, the Lord, and you know, was my words, you know, something that gave her that just one more fight. And you know, a couple of days later, she was functional to where we could be having a conversation. I said, you know, hey, Mom, you gave me a scare there. You know, I'll be fine. And wanted to see, you know, Jazz and the kids, and you know, we're in there, and you know, she's even smiling and laughing. I'm like, wow. So now I'm thinking, okay, she's about to come home. It's probably the 10th, 11th of November. They're like, you know, just one more thing. Not a problem. And I'm at home. Another one, 3, 4 in the morning. Hey, things turned really bad last night. This is it. Okay. That ride again.
Longest ride.
That ride,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
And now you've said it once, Sully. What do you say now? What, do you top that speech? Do you top? I
mean, what do you say? You know?
Do I say the same thing and act like it was recorded? Like, I mean, you're going through your head. You're like, I want to be genuine and speak from the heart and just say what I want to say, Mom. But like, I've been saying it. Like, I'm sorry. Go home. You know, you don't have to fight no more, Mom. I know you're a fighter. I've watched you fight. Just let it go. It's fine. And I'm like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Like, I told her to go home. We're done.
Yeah.
You don't need to do this no more. And, I left again, Sully. Got a call at 7 in the morning. She's not as responsive, but her levels have come back a little bit. I can't make this up, man.
No,
I can't make this up. You can ask Cap one day that story. No problem. Thank you, Lord. I get another chance to be with my mom. I didn't know if she'd ever come back out of it. Sully, around the 20th, 21st, they said, hey, we're going to discharge her.
She's out.
She's leaving. She's leaving on the 24th. It's New Year's Eve. Okay. I'm sorry, Thanksgiving Eve.
Yep.
And I always have Thanksgiving at my home. So the family's like, do you want us there? I said, I do. My mom's coming home, but let's have dinner. My mom was only coming home at 6 o'clock. Let's have everybody there. I'm very happy. It's like, God's giving me, I want to give back to you guys, give a beautiful feast in my mom's honor. And say my mom, you know, she just wanted some cake. And I said, I got you, girl. So, some pumpkin pie, whatever, I guess it was.
Oh, my God, lady after my own heart. I love some pumpkin pie.
Yeah, so I was like, all right. Sully, I get there. She's up. I walk in, and she's up helping the patient beside her.
Are you kidding me?
In the same room. I said, Mom, you can't be working, please. She's like, no, I got you, Joyce. I got you. And she's helping move the pan and moving this and helping her get her ice. And I'm like, my God.
It's in her.
She just wants to give. So, can't make this up, Sully. They said, go get the car, pull around that circle at the Good Samaritan in the back.
Yep.
I pull the car around. Lady, I'm waiting there 20, 30, 40, 50 minutes. I'm like, what the heck is going on? I come down, a nurse comes down, kind of tearing up. And they're like, we're so sorry. When the nurse was taking out her stent, air got in her lung and the pneumonia came back. Like, it flooded in her system. I thought, okay, this is it. She's out. She's in a coma, whatever they did. It put her out. 10 days later, and this is where it ends, she got better again. She overcame it again. This time I picked her up. We came home. We sat at my table there at Millbridge. We talked, had one of the best conversations just about life and how much we love each other and da-da-da-da-da. And she wanted to have dinner. We had Jazz and Isaiah, Robin, my mom, and myself sat at that table, had a light dinner. She was tired, and I said, hey, let's lay you down, get her, you know, on the couch. And she was just so joyful, you know what I mean? And I remember holding her hand and saying, Mom, I'll see you in the morning. You know what I mean? She's like, absolutely. And I had a meeting I had to head to in the morning. So I was up pretty early, about 6:30. And I came down. I just wanted to maybe give her a kiss or whatever. And she was gone. So that fight was to come home and have one more dinner.
Dinner and be with the family.
And be with us.
Wow.
And that fight is what I go by. If she can overcome that, I've said that on stage, but I was able to get it out. And that's the passion that drives me. Yeah. And that's what's going to drive my children. That's going to drive my family, my extended family, and you and your family. When you're around me, that passion, we're going to help to the end, and then we're going to always be fighters. So this community of Lebanon County is fighters. I know that about us. We deserve more, but we got to fight to get it. And that's kind of what I want to continue to give back. Yeah. I'm just going to keep doing it. It doesn't have to be by way of the charity. It's my time. It's my efforts. It's my ability to help anybody in need anytime. You know, you talked about just giving consultation to young kids. given others that have come through a DUI and can they rebound life out of it? Yeah, you can. But anyway, Sully, that, like I said, I've only really told that story three times, man. My son Isaiah didn't know his grandmother passed. That night, you were probably at the football game. It was a Thursday night football game for the JV, and Zay ends up throwing five. I knew she passed that morning. We walked him out of the house while she was still there and didn't let him go see her because I was calling the ambulance, and I needed him to go to school, stay focused. You know what I mean? Went on, and I'm not exaggerating, has had the best game I've ever watched him play, five touchdowns. And wow. That night when he came out of the locker room, I let him know she's gone. And I'll never forget that moment, man. But he's been a fighter ever since, too, man. That game was for her. He dedicates a lot to her, so.
Trim, I appreciate you sharing those stories with me and the listeners. That gets real deep.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, we'll take a sip break on that. Take a sip break. But I want to ask you, because it's something that I think everyone's going to have to deal with, because we all have parents.
Sure.
How do you overcome, or how do you move past losing somebody like that? You know what I mean? Like somebody that's a rock.
That was my everything. Yeah. It's not easy, but I have been asked just in the near, the recent, Robin lost some family members. Just came back from a funeral in Brooklyn probably about a week and a half ago. And, you know, finding my faith a lot more has really helped me understand that our, like I said, we talk about our time here on earth is very short. And the Lord puts people in our path, including our parents. You know what I mean? That he wants us to have time to spend with each other, and you'll spend time again, but she wasn't mine. She was his. And when he needs to bring her home, he takes her home. And I just celebrate the time we had together. And I realized that is what he allowed me to have. And I know a lot of people have less time. But when it comes to overcoming, it is a big thing that does help is honor them. Find something. It doesn't have to, you don't have to start a charity. You don't have to start, you know, a save the world campaign kind of feel, but honor them. If it's every day, the way that maybe you raise your children, if it's a way that you interact in society, if it's a way that you interact with your loved ones, if it's a way that you can help somebody dealing with somebody's a loss, you know, but honor them. Because if they're looking down, and they are, that's what's going to make them proud. Because think about, you know, we both have two children. The day that we have to, you know, move on from them, I hope I can look down and watch Isaiah and Jasmine honoring by way of being a servant leader and helping others. And in their heart saying, I learned some of this from my dad. And just honor them. And then the fact is that when you do that, Sully, and you can truly find that in your heart to try to find everything you do to honor them, it's exciting because we do a lot of things in life, even after our parents pass. And you just keep building up that trophy case of honor. Mom, this is for you. This is for you. You know, and grandma, my grandparents were a huge part of my life as well. And honoring them, it's like, it makes those achievements in life as small as they possibly could be. Just handling an argument with your loved one or your child in a way that you're like, that one's for you, Mom. And it just makes you feel good, man. And look for things that remind you of them. Because honestly, the Lord might have put them there for you. You know, you've always heard, man, that reminds me of my dad, or that reminds me of my mom.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a reason it's there.
Yeah.
And accept it. Yeah. So again, I think I would try to find the positive as much as possible and know that everything they wanted in life, for those that are parents, you already know this, but those maybe that don't have children yet, you're going to want to just give and give and give to your children. You want to see them happy. You want to see them, you know, be proud of the individuals they're becoming. So when you pass on, you don't want them to stop that. You don't want them to live in grief too long. Yeah. Everybody grieves differently. So I'm not saying you can't cry. You know, you got to honor in any way you feel fit. But if you can find those positive honoring moments, they don't stop until you stop.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, I hope maybe my last days are on Zaya's couch. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow. I'm glad you went and said that, because a lot of the guests I've had on the past on the podcast have brought up religion and their faith and how it affects people's lives and everything and how they look at the world. I don't know. I think it's something special, you know.
It is. I think that's what he wants for us. You know, he throws adversity at us to draw us closer to him.
Yeah. I've said before, everything happens for a reason. I think everything is set.
I agree.
And, you know, whether it's good or bad, you don't know it in the moment, but it happens for a reason. So now to turn it over to, yeah, to Hope Factory.
Sure.
You know, how did that start? Because I, you know, you, yeah, and I, this would probably be a 4-hour podcast if we really, yeah, want to get after it and get going. You know,
I'll give you the highlight reel.
But yeah, no, please, yeah, I want to, yeah, I want to hear all about it. You know, and let's dive into that.
Sure.
Because I think we're kind of getting up to par with, yeah, where we're at now. Yeah.
Sure, no problem. Yeah, Hope Factory. Like I said, you know, honoring my mother, my grandparents, honoring, you know, even play it forward and make it, getting it across the goal line of what we'd call a 501c3 non-charitable organization. The reason I wanted to do it, because I think I can help, and so can my board members, generate even more funding, because this community is going to need funding. It's going to need a lot. You know, I mean, I know there's so many great ones out there. We talked about Make a Difference, but even just the teachers in our communities, the coaches, the medical, the fire and rescue. There's so many people giving time just to help others, yeah, just to help others. And it does cost money. So I felt trying to do it the old fashioned way of just asking, hey, can you help me help them, is one way of doing it. But finding a 501c3 and making a little bit more official allows bigger companies to generate more money. So now I'm actually opening grant submissions and submitting for grants of $10,000-$20,000 at a time. With that kind of money, you truly can make a difference in multiple people's lives or in communities as a whole. But Hope Factory, I sat around and I talked about, we were talked about with Nick Kids, and I love that, but I kind of felt that, okay, now we can help this, you know, let's say underprivileged or challenged child, help them, you know, provide hope for themselves. And I love that. I really did. I was able to do a small podcast on WLBR one time, and we talked about the suicide rate in young children is alarming.
Yeah.
It is alarming. And what Gordon and Nick and Nick Kids do is let people have a sense of hope. Maybe somebody at home hasn't told them how proud they are, but go ahead and be around these programs. There's an abundant amount of people telling you how good you're doing and how proud they are of you.
Right. Yeah.
And I wanted to help that. So I liked that, but it kind of gave me that path. Then it's Sark, and I really love that as well. So I loved all of that, but I just felt like I was stuck in one thing.
Right. They like specialize in their, yeah, own specialize, areas,
and they're,
right,
very,
yeah,
good at it.
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, are, well, they, yeah, got that. So when I started it, you know, I went to the legal teams and so forth and said, hey, I want to do this. And they challenged me. Mikey Bechtel and his team over at Buzgan Davis helped,
yeah,
me,
yeah,
challenge me to say, for what? Like, for what? I can feel the heart. I can feel the passion.
Right.
But for what? Like, why do you, and Mikey's a good friend of mine. He's like, well, why? And I'm like, you know what? Let me go back and think about that. He said, think about a name. Maybe that'll draw you closer. And it was during a time where, when we lost the two Spanish young boys over here on, I think it was 5th Street. And we heard about the family struggling and so forth. And I wasn't up and going at this point, but there's an opportunity where I don't know what specialization they fall into, but they needed love and help and support. That helped me make the difference. And I said, I'm going to open a factory. And I went with the word factory because it could be very diverse. We can move a lot of products out of a factory.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now I realized maybe I can't cure autism. Maybe I can't cure child suicide. Maybe I can't cure, you know, gun violence. But I can raise hope. And I can raise hope in a lot of people that are either helping do it as we speak today or inflicted by it. So the word Hope Factory came up that way. So I'm going to build a factory that is going to generate hope,
produce hope
where,
yeah,
this community needs it most. And I don't know where that's going to come from. I'd love to spend a day and say, there's nowhere to give. But, yeah, unfortunately, this world has given us enough adverse times, and our small community here has enough,
there's
of it
a
themselves.
Lot.
But I want to continue to build enough revenue to, at any given point, be a resource. And I think the Hope Factory will stand for that. And that got started in July of last year is when it became official. We did a couple early events. I said, maybe we'll wait a year and just kind of brainstorm, get the board on board, figure out where our financial GPS will take us and how much money we need to kind of get started and make an actual impact in some of these communities or in some of these organizations that we're just going to support. We're going to raise money a lot of times,
yes,
and give to communities already started. If it's given to Nick Kids this weekend at their golf tournament, all for it. If it's given to, and I'll talk about some of the events, what it raised. Now we went and had a dance, which I thought was a phenomenal thing. We did it on Thanksgiving Eve, and we did it at the St. Cecilia's Church. A lot of Lebanon High basketball used to do it. So we took that over. Timmy Spiro and the team allowed me to kind of take that over. They had
good guy, very great guy.
Yeah. And he said, hey, we haven't had it in a couple of years. A lot of us want it back. Why don't you go ahead and do it there? We packed the house, had a beautiful night. I was able to talk about the introduction of Hope Factory, what it stood for. My board members were able to get interviewed. Sammy Sierra was over there helping do some video casting and stuff like that and interviewing us. And you could feel this community coming together. And that evening, we decided, let's find out an immediate need and where we can make an immediate impact. And we didn't know what we were going to raise, but even however small, we're going to make a difference. And what we found out is a lot of inner city children here in Lebanon, there's field trips. Remember going on field trips when you were a kid?
All the time. We love that. Yeah, love field trips. Yeah.
Could you imagine being one of the four kids that the other 26 go, but us four have to stay back because we don't have the funds to go?
No, I couldn't imagine. We can't afford it. No, I couldn't imagine that.
Could you imagine being one of the 26 looking back at the four kids that can't go? And that's happening as we speak today. So we were able to create every dollar from that evening went to make a push that every kid gets on that bus.
That's awesome.
In Lebanon County.
Yeah, especially at that age because, like, you know, the kids that get to go, you know, we all know how kids are. They might be making a little fun or pointing fingers.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's like
horrifying.
You want to fit in at that age. You know, you want to be a part of the group.
Yeah, I want to go in the fun time. You know, and a lot of times it's getting kids to want to keep coming to school at this age, believe it or not. There's a lot of younger kids skipping school in middle and elementary, but they don't get to do any of the fun stuff.
Yeah, so why go to school if we're not having fun?
Exactly. So. Yeah. I was moved by that, and that was John Guth and Trish Guth. You know, she's a teacher here in Lebanon County, and said that there's a need. Then that's tonight.
Yeah,
that's what tonight is. And me just telling that story to the community that came out that night, you should have saw the generosity pouring out. That we were chanting, "No kid left behind, no kid left behind."
Yeah,
and it's exciting. And then we raised some money throughout getting some grants or just some donations from small businesses, from Boyers helped out a lot.
Oh, Bobby.
Bobby. Shout yeah, he's a Bobby phenomenal Angelo. Guy. Bobby yeah. Angelo and some others that came to us. And with that money, we were able to donate to special needs children so they can have a prom.
Oh, wow.
And there's Kiwanis, I think, does that for them. So we wanted to be part of that. So this year we're going to do what we call an adult prom. I know that's been bouncing around with some other areas as well. So we're going to put that same evening event on that night before Thanksgiving, but we're going to prom it out a little bit. And all the money is going to continue to help with that. And we have a golf tournament coming up on August 23rd.
Dude.
Yeah, August 23rd, 1 o'clock at Lebanon Valley.
Oh, nice.
$75 to play in it. You know, of course, $300 for a foursome, but those dollars are going to, honestly, I hope it feels good for everybody donating that day. That's going to truly be the foundation of what Hope Factory is. We're looking to raise as much as $10,000 to $15,000 to set the stage for 15, 20 years to come. And hopefully my children pass it forward as well as my board members. But try to come on out. We have, I'll give you information that you can post on the video later and stuff. But that's what we're going to start. We're going to try to have 3 to 4 events a year, Sully, as we go forward. The board's been working on very hard to get a purse bingo is a big one.
Yeah.
And Trish Guth does a great job with that. She's going to help us do one of those. Then we want to do a color run. You've heard about those down in Philadelphia, and Hershey's now done one.
I did one when Courtney was back in college.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
okay.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot
of
fun.
That's when I was in some kind of shape. I could actually, you know, run a little bit.
Yeah. So we're working with Byler and those guys.
Yeah.
And they want to kind of do one, and maybe we can land it in their parking lot. We can team up together. He does so much for the community as well. And then, of course, I have Kevin and the Ash team that is part of our, you know, he's on my committee. So when you look at having so many good individuals that intertwine in the networking of our community, from small businesses wanting to help each other, large businesses want to help small business, and everybody saying, I want to help people. Back to that whole thing that the core of all this is people.
Yeah.
We just need an avenue. We need a channel to get the money to them, where I think big businesses are saying, hey, I'll help. And that's what I'm hoping people are hearing tonight. You just get it to them. You take that passion, you take that love, you take that pride in this community, and you go get it to those individuals.
Yep.
And that's my commitment to everybody that wants to help out, either through, like I said, a purse bingo will be a fun time, a color run's going to be a good deal, the golf tournament will be a steadfast thing once a year in the fall. And then we'll also do that adult prom that we can help other special needs children have the exact same experience that all of us had.
Those are great events. Those are awesome. I mean, the color run, golf, you can't, I mean, what y'all are doing, you can't beat that. And, you know, it's great that like Ash and, and we say Byler, you know, all these companies coming together, all these people. And for listeners that don't know, Ash is a cigar bar and lounge. Here in Lebanon. Actually very taken off pretty well. And
It's doing phenomenal.
It's doing phenomenal. For sure. So your passion in life, what would you say that is, and how does it intertwine with Hope Factory?
I think my passion probably, you know, of course, is my family. You know, everybody will say that one first. But being able to provide for my family. And I do that by my way of being, an executive vice president with TCC, which we have here in Lebanon County and so forth. Verizon Wireless, you can just go with that. So I'm very passionate to be the best that I can possibly be, which we have about 1,500 stores across the country. And with that being said, that allows me to provide. And having that kind of career led me to the passion of that I can help those employees. And I feel good about that, Sully. I really do. But those employees are making a great living. You know, the wireless industry is doing extremely well, and it always has and probably always will. But I need to figure out a way to take this same ammunition that I help them build beautiful careers, make great money for their families, and go to those that aren't working for me. And those individuals live right here in my community. So I'm going to find the passion that I have to help people. It's people that probably need it more than what I'm used to helping. Again, I can lead, you know, thousands of people on stage and so forth, but I want to basically one day be able to sit there and say, I've helped thousands of individuals that didn't have to hear me talk about cell phones, but I helped them better their lives and better their children's lives and better this community. And, you know, hopefully we can help small businesses make a difference and team up with us and so forth. And large businesses like Byler and everybody else.
And to tie in with that, you know, one of the questions on the form I had was, what motivates you? And you had said helping others be successful, which I think is very powerful, especially nowadays, more so than ever. And one of the salespeople that I listen to, he since passed away, is Zig Ziglar. I don't know if you ever heard of him. Old-time salesman.
Phenomenal.
And one of his quotes was, he has audiobooks for listeners in case you want to look him up, Zig Ziglar. His quote was, "You can have everything in life you want if you will just help other people get what they want." You know, so like,
read that.
What, again, what motivates you? I know passion and motivation can sometimes be different.
I mean, the motivation, honestly, is probably the feeling of, and I hate to kind of use it just as that, the feeling that I let my community down that night of the accident, and the feeling I had being torn down in this community and wanting my family and those that stuck by me, my friends, my family, you guys, to go be able to look out and go, that's special. He could have just ran away from here and he came back to help the same people that ripped him down, you know. And I that motivates me a lot to turn the page. And what, why it motivates me, not for me personally, but for my son, my wife, like I said, my loved ones, my daughter, I need them to know that I might have tarnished the name one evening, but I'm going to paint the hell out of it the rest of my life. And I'm going to do it with a lot of great people that want to do, give a little bit of their time. I'll do the heavy lifting as much as I possibly can. I don't try to ask a lot of people for anything. I want to be known for, he faced adversity, he was torn down, and he came back with love. And I think that honors my mom. That motivates me. And I think a lot of us probably have that in us, that, you know, somebody didn't believe in us. Somebody gave up on us.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody felt that you weren't right for the job. You weren't right for this girl. You weren't right for that guy. You ain't right for this community. You ain't right for this church. Okay. I'll fight for those people too. I see a lot of divide in our country today. And of course, we have another election year, and that seems to bring it back. I'm really excited to have our first full year be an election year. And during these trying times, and I'm sure we might feel it, man, we're going to have some events and we're going to have some good conversations with some people that care about this community. And we're going to hug it out. We're not going to fight it out. We're going to do something special in the face of adversity. And again, that'll honor my mom.
Bring people together. That's it, what it's all about, the community.
No matter what's happening around us, we can control what's in front of us. and we can go to bed at night knowing what we did with our part.
There you go.
If Lebanon County can come together that way, let's get it on.
Perfect. Yeah.
That motivates me.
There you go. And now the board members
yeah.
on Hope Factory. Is there anyone else you want to shout out? I know you mentioned sure. John Guth and everything, but just so we cover all them and give them credit for what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you look at it, I got John Guth has come on board, has taken on the treasury. So early on, we got money coming in, going out, taxes, things like that. I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
Then I have Josh Gates. I think you know Josh Gates, big yeah. Josh. Almost retired. He was really close to retiring. I think they pulled him back in from the military. And he is my vice president as we speak. Gary Gristick, as we talked about, is my my son-in-law. He has taken on the auditor position. So again, I think what that's going to design us to do is keep us official, you know, auditing, you know, did we copy this right? Making sure our notes, our minute notes and everything are correct. And then I have Makiba. A lot of people know Makiba in the neighborhood, Cameron, where she has taken on our secretary role and she keeps an amazing amount of notes.
Yeah.
And in my opinion,
are you going to pull it up on your phone right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I was just going to show you just for a second yeah. here. It is crazy. And I mean, I was telling you, I'll get you I'll give it to you later.
Okay.
So I don't
want
to
yeah.
stop us now, but
yeah.
I said, hey, I'm going to be on the podcast, Makiba. I need some marketing. I need the notes. I need the dates within seconds. I swear to God, she might have a little AI in her.
Yeah.
A little AI in her. I don't know, Makiba, just yeah. right on the screen.
Shout out to Keebs. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
And then
very
I,
cool.
Yeah. So Makiba's doing a phenomenal job there. And then Kevin Endy, as I talked about over at Ash, just watched him be a young entrepreneur, has a beautiful family as well. And, you know, I asked him at the last moment and I said, hey, I haven't known you as long as these others, but I am absolutely enamored with your willingness to help this community, not just by opening Ash. His wife, Lori, runs her own salon, but I watched him with his small business find ways immediately to go out and help and partner up and do different things. And then that group is how we connect with Byler and everybody yeah. else, and got me in touch with Mikey Bechtel, which was our lawyer, then gets us in touch. You know, we've held conversations with our governors. We've held touch with the mayor, our DA. But again, that board has done a phenomenal job for me early on. And as we go forward, anybody that wants to be part of the Hope Factory, you have a board that sets up just so you have an odd number at times to make sure you can do a vote if need be. We don't have a lot of those. We're just voting to say yes to love. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, right. Yep.
But we have the committee opportunities as the golf tournament starts. Many people in the past, you've helped out on that.
Yeah.
So if people say, I want to be part of the committee to help out on the dance, I have a lot of connections to help with that. You know, I want to give out some contact information when we're done, and then that's fine. If you want to say, I want to help with the help bingo, I want to help with the dance at the end, or the golf tournament, or the color run, anything. You can be part of the committee. There's no commitment at their part if they don't want to give any kind of time or treasure, but it might just be a resource I need. So I want to open it up to Lebanon County. If they're hearing this and thinking, hey, I can get behind this. And like I said, some people need it. If you want to use it for marketing of your business and knowing that you're philanthropic as well, that helps. You know that in trying times,
yeah.
you know, we want to stay small in a company like this or in the community, and you want to give back to small business. This is a perfect way of doing it, finding a channel like Hope Factory to do it through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Hope Factory. I love it. Producing hope for those that are, you know, less fortunate or those unsung heroes out there. And
I love it.
And that's what it's all about, keeping it local. So, you know, how can our listeners connect with you, Trim, and follow along on your journey? Do you have a website? Let's plug all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, connecting with me personally, I'm willing to give my personal information out, is Mike Trimble, T-R-I-M-B-L-E. Email address is mtrimble, T-R-I-M-B-L-E, at tccrocks.com. rocks.com. So that's T as in Tom, C as in cat, rocks.com. And then my phone number is 717-437-5024. And as far as, you know, emailing just to the Hope Factory themselves, that is hopefactory717@gmail.com.
I like
so
that.
Once again, yeah. hopefactory717@gmail.com. Plan on that, the 717.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. yeah.
And we also have, and I'll send this out to you, Sully, you know, as we're doing the podcast, but, you know, anybody that wants to help and make any kind of monetary donation, that's not why I'm here today. Again, that's not what it's about. But we do have two links that you could kind of maybe post out there that they can kind of donate to. I have 1099s that I can give back. I'm sorry, 1099s, W-9s that I could give back for tax write-offs. I know we're coming up, you know, just finishing up the fiscal season and starting again. So yep. A good time to maybe get some of those funds off the books and get it out of the way early in the year. But yeah, together, this community can do this. The Hope Factory will just be a channel and an avenue to those in need. And some areas that we're going to be pushing hard in the next 2 years, we really want to help veterans. We're seeing a really big need. My heart goes out to those with the PTSD, mm-hmm. the suicide rates. I'm studying those, and I want to find ways. And sometimes they just need resources. You know what I mean?
Yep.
We want to help the NIC kids as well. We believe we can help fund some of that. We're going to fund some children tomorrow. Again, helping somebody get past tough times. We want to help the special needs children in this community this year. We want to help teachers. We believe they are incredible. They're the superstars. You know, I was just out the other day and I went to the NFL draft out in Detroit, and I see 270,000 people show up to watch a football player get drafted.
Yeah.
And then you wonder, are they the heroes, or our teachers or our nurses? And who shows up for them? Hope Factory is going to be one of them.
There you go.
Because we're going to provide boxes of tools that they need in the workplace, tools they need in the classrooms. And that's a big one for us. And then the other one, you know, we do believe we continue to have a problem with poverty in Lebanon City, as well as even Lebanon County. I am blown away with some of the statistics that we have homeless children living under a bridge, going to junior high, going to our high schools. We got to find them, man. We got to help them. Mm-hmm. We got to get them there. So underprivileged, like I said, military, teachers, nurses, special needs. We're going to make a difference, man. And we're going to raise hope. Yeah.
So it's all about at the Hope Factory.
That's right. We're all here to work.
I'm loving it.
So I'm back at the factory.
There you go. It's all back at the factory.
Maybe that's what it was. It's like, hey, you started at a factory.
Yeah.
And you couldn't imagine living this way. So you come back and you build a factory to change people not to have to live that way. I like it, Sully.
That's wild.
We might have been onto something here.
Full circle.
Full circle.
We got to, yeah.
We got to clone that, baby.
Yeah, we got to do that. Yeah, exactly. So before we close out, is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know?
Just my deepest appreciation for anyone listening today, anyone willing to help us, help those in need. I want to thank you, Sully, for having us. I know you have a cast of amazing individuals that have probably better story to tell, but giving me a moment to kind of hear our story, hear my story, your family, your father, your mother, your wife, who I love to death, Courtney, and the babies. I want to say thank you to your in-laws, the Garloffs, and then my entire board member, my family that's been supportive throughout this. And then my company, TCC, that has helped me, you know, do a lot of philanthropic things in the workplace that has allowed me to get the education I needed to get this off the ground. So I wouldn't be here without all of you guys and the support that this community has continued to give me, you know, throughout my life. I just want to say thank you, man.
Awesome. Mike Trimble, Executive Vice President, Philanthropist, and President of Hope Factory, a 501c3 nonprofit on the American Grown Podcast and the Color Tech Creative Solutions Studios. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.